This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Alan Huffenbloom, who is a campaign consultant here in Los Angeles and throughout California. Welcome to Utopia Media's California Politics Today.
Pleased to be here.
Could you give our listeners a brief rundown of your historical and current involvement in the political process as a consultant?
Well, first of all, I started off working for the Republican Party in L.A. County in grassroots, and eventually moved into political campaign management. I've been managing political campaigns, I think, since about 1979, doing scores of campaign for Congress, state assembly, state senate, as well as some ballot props. Currently, though, I don't do any political campaign any longer. I'm more of a political analyst, and I published the California Target Book, which is a publication available by subscription that analyzes and tracks all the partisan races here in California.
If people want to get that book, how can they do that?
They can go online and gives them plenty of information on it. It's www.californiatargetbook, all one word, .com.
Okay, good. Tell us how happy you are with the current arrangements for funding political candidates and their campaigns.
Well, it's not a matter of being happy or unhappy with them. I would say, by the way, I'm pretty much let me rephrase myself.
Sure.
I'm pretty much unhappy with it because I think the political restrictions related on campaign contributions, which meaning the amount of money that could be given to a political candidate, are so small that what it's done is allow this plethora, or you know what is called independent expenditure committees, in which a group of individuals of varying interests can raise as much money as they want and spend as much as they want on behalf or in opposition to a particular candidate, as long as they don't communicate with that candidate.
Are those 527 groups? Or
on a federal level, they're 527. Here in California, they're called Independent Expenditure Committees, IEs. And you got to remember, here in California, when you're dealing with races for the state Senate and Assembly, huge sums of money are being spent, much more so than many congressional races throughout the country. It's not unusual for a state Senate race here in California to cost anywhere from $4 to $5 million per candidate. And it's not uncommon for the state assembly races in the general election and even sometimes in the primary to exceed $1 million.
Do these independent expenditure committees often spend more than the candidates' committees themselves?
Certainly collectively. But in some cases, what's happening with the advent of campaign contribution limits, what started off, you'd have these IEs that would get involved in multiple campaigns. But we saw during the election cycle for the first time, an IE would be developed for a specific candidate running for office, let's say for state senate,
right,
or state assembly.
And you're saying that it's sort of like water finding its own level, because these contributions can't go into the campaign organization of the candidate, they go into the IE groups, but they're not under the control of the candidates.
They're not under the control of the candidate, and therefore there's absolutely no restriction on the amount of dollars they can spend and how they can spend it. And
in terms of money they can collect, can individuals give $1 million, or corporations or labor unions give money to these IE groups?
Yes, they can, as long as they're reported.
Okay. You said you're not actively working on campaigns. Now, when you did you involve yourself in the fundraising part of the campaigns?
No, very seldom. As the manager of the campaign, as the chief strategist, I would leave it to others as far as raising the money. My job was to be able to spend it properly and adequately in handling the expenditures of the race.
Okay.
But I seldom got myself personally involved in raising money, other than going before groups and telling them why I thought the race could be won.
Okay. Do you think that the influence of money in politics at the present time is too much, just right, or not enough?
Oh, it just varies from race to race. You know, you just can't put a blanket on it. I mean, for the most part, as everybody knows, more candidates are underfunded than there are overfunded. And determining whether or not you are adequately funded usually depends whether or not the party establishment believes you actually do have a winning race. You got to remember, when we're doing with political campaigns, there's a lot of people out there running for Congress or the state legislature, but they're Republicans running in a safe Democratic seat, or they're Democrats running in a safe Republican seat, in many cases, which is the overwhelming majority of all the districts in the state. And therefore, they're out there running, and they're trying to put out brochures and what have you, but they're woefully underfunded, and they're never able to put together a serious challenge against the incumbent. But then you have the few that are truly competitive races, in which like if it's a primary election, it's competitive because it's an open seat in which the incumbent is not seeking re-election, and therefore, whoever wins the primary and is the top vote-getter because it's a safe seat, it's tantamount to election the following November. So those are the races all the special interests will play into. In a November general election, it's pretty much up to the party leaders of both parties to pretty much get the word out as to which elections they believe are actually competitive, the ones that they're going to play in. And therefore, you find the different interest groups will then start playing within those competitive races. Or, which is like we were talking about before, they'll set up an IE specifically to either assist or try to defeat one of the candidates in the November election. So general election, whether money goes into a race or not, is usually determined by the party leadership. But in the primaries, then you have the various interest groups, battling each other. For example, it's a safe Democratic seat. Candidate A tends to have it be more of a pro-business, Chamber of Commerce type Democrat. Candidate B tends to be a labor-oriented or very liberal, let's say a Howard Dean type Democrat. Then you'll have the various interest groups. You'll have business organizations, trade associations, such trying to support the business-oriented Democrat, where you have the labor union and the environmentalists, the Sierra Club, the League of Conservation Voters going after the more liberal candidate.
Within the context of that kind of race, does the candidate who gets the most money usually win?
Not necessarily. I don't think the threshold is not the most money. The threshold is an adequate amount of money. There's been many a race that I've been involved in as a political manager where my opponents outspent me. I've had my opponent outspend me as much as 2-1. But my candidate was able to raise sufficient funds that I was able to get my message across and to toot my own horn. I thought I just ran a better campaign than the other candidate who was spending more money, and I was able to communicate my issues.
So essentially it's reaching a threshold level of viability to get your message out, and when that's done, the most motivated or the best idea-equipped candidate will often win.
Yes. That doesn't mean, by the way, I have seen at times where someone spends so much sums of money that they're basically able to blow away the opposition. I send one mailer, that candidate, the other candidate sends out 5 mailers.
Right.
I do one TV spot, they do 10 TV spots.
But that happens,
but that's the exception rather than the rule.
Okay. Tell us, before we start talking about Lonnie Hancock's bill for public financing of elections, I wanted to get your views on how the process ought to be reformed. If you were writing the bill and signing it and passing it and so on, what steps would you take to reform the political contributions process?
I just think it's just public disclosure. First of all, I do not believe it is possible. Let me back up a moment. I am one who does understand the impact of political giving, and I do know that campaign contributions can be a corrupting influence on political candidates, that they so badly want to win a race, they almost, sell their soul to the devil to get a contribution, quid pro quos, and what have you. Not all, in fact, I don't even think a majority, but there are some that can be corrupted by the process. But I'm the one who believes, number one, you can't drive private money out of the political process. A, it's unconstitutional, and A, it should not be done. Government has the ability, elected officials have the ability to regulate and tax businesses, corporations, labor unions, individuals, what have you. And you cannot deny them the ability to try to communicate to voters as to why they should or should not vote for a particular candidate.
Are you essentially saying that contributions should be there shouldn't be limits on them?
I do not. There should be, but there should be full disclosure.
No limits, but full disclosure.
Full disclosure.
So if a person wants to give $1 million to their own campaign, $1 million to someone else's campaign, labor unions, corporations, trade associations, groups of any kind who want to give money to candidates, they should be able to do it in any amount, as long as it's fully disclosed.
Is sure, because then you'll have the political implications of that contribution.
Okay.
I can assure you, if I'm running a candidate for Congress or the state legislature and I get $1 million from a tobacco company,
right?
I can assure you then, if that's disclosed immediately, everybody in the district is going to know that, and then they can make their own judgment of whether or not they think that's good or bad as far as their own candidate for office.
Okay.
The only restriction I will be make, I will make some concessions about timing of the contribution.
Okay, what?
And certainly, and making sure there are strict regulations as far as promises. I do know that sometimes 75% of all money is spent in the last 10 days of an election.
Right.
And you could have a situation where there could be some conspiracy knowing that $500,000 is going to be deposited in your bank account 24 hours before election day, so you go out and start spending that money.
Right.
I understand that problem, and I think there's ways that could, in which you could deny significant contributions of $100,000 or greater less than 48 hours before an election or something such as that.
Okay.
That I can see. But other than that, I don't think there should be any restriction.
Okay. Last week, the Elections Committee in the Assembly in Sacramento approved and passed on to the Appropriations Committee AB 583 by Lonnie Hancock from Berkeley that would provide public funding for candidates for elections to the legislative offices in California, statewide, and assembly and senate districts. What's your understanding of the main provisions of this bill, and then we're going to go into how you feel about it?
Well, the main provision, again, is trying to allow candidates to be able to run for public offices, but may or may not necessarily be able to raise sufficient funds out of the private sector. But again, the desire to want to be elected to public office by itself is not a reason why taxpayers should fund their ability to run for public office. I mean, I've used to say all the time, as one who used to run political campaigns, I would have someone call me up and say, Alan, I want to run for the state assembly. Will you manage my campaign? And the first question coming out of my mouth was, who other than yourself would like to see you get elected? And I've had people coming, not even their spouse wants to see them get elected, much less anybody else. So the desire to want to run for office is not by itself a credible factor as to why they should be publicly supported. There has to be some mechanism to prove that there is a modicum of support out there, and there's people other than themselves who desire to see their election. One other thing about public contribution, it does kind of sift away as to who are the serious contenders and who are not.
As I understand the provisions of AB 583, before candidates can qualify for any of the public funds, they need to collect a certain number of $5 contributions from residents of their own jurisdiction of the district that they're running from 500 to 25,000 if they're running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
So it would require a certain amount of financial commitment on the part of people other than the candidate in order to demonstrate their qualification for the public funding.
That is correct. And what you'll find as you do when you see people here in Los Angeles, who we do have public financing here in the city of Los Angeles, you find those who come out of grassroots tend to have an advantage over others because they know a large number of active Republicans or Democrats. You find that those that come out of certain trades, like realtors, where all of a sudden you're running in a district and there are 500 real estate offices and all of a sudden start putting money into it, or if you find yourself as, in certain trades and what have you, where they can have, bundling of funds, and there tend to be somewhat of an advantage. But the point I make, and I'm not saying public financing is a bad idea per se. What I'm saying is taking money out of the taxpayer's pocket, and it in no way lessens the influence and impact of private money.
Well, the argument that's made and the provisions that are in this bill say that if a candidate accepts the public, qualifies themselves by collecting a number of small contributions and gets the money, they are then obligated not to accept any private funding for their campaign.
Again, but then you don't. What about the independent expenditures?
And if there are independent expenditures, according to the bill, money is provided from the taxpayer funds to the candidate to match the funds from the independent expenditure.
Well, then
campaigns.
You're going to find that the number of taxpayer dollars are going to go up and up and up, because I'm going to repeat what I keep saying: you cannot drive private money out of the political process in the United States of America. Look at the presidential campaign. I mean, because of Watergate, way back in Richard Nixon, 1972, when the presidential campaigns were totally financed by private sources, huge sums of money, being made, and the abuses during Watergate, we said we're going to have public funding of presidential campaigns and get the private money out of it, and more money, private money, spent in presidential races than there ever have been before. Do you really believe that the public financing of Bush's and Kerry's campaign, in the year 2004, drove private money out? I mean, you saw Bill Clinton bringing people to the White House, raising private money, 527. What I'm saying is, the more you restrict the ability of individual interest groups to give directly to candidates, the more underground the true source of the money becomes. One of the things I do with my California target book, I put out what I call my hot sheet that starts 10 days prior you know, to election day. And what I attempt to do is keep track of all these independent expenditure committees. And it's not that easy to do. All of a sudden, you'll see a committee filed with the Secretary of State, California to save the whales. And by the time you do your research, you find it's coming from, you know, the California Nurses Association, the University Faculty Association, and some state assembly member. And that, by the way, and I can make the same type of thing a bunch of conservative groups on the other side. The more you restrict the ability to be bold and just give the money to the candidate, require the candidate in a moment's notice to tell everybody they're receiving it, it drives the money underground.
Okay.
And then you end up finding out, you never know who really is paying for the campaign.
Okay, what do you see as the politics of AB 583? Who's supporting it? Who's opposing it?
Oh, I don't know if it will go very far. I don't think Arnold Schwarzenegger is for taxpayer funding.
I think
the people who tend to support it are self-proclaimed, advocates of trying to clean up the process. I think there's, and by the way, they're really sincere in trying to, clean up the process. I talked to Bob Stern, who with a group here that's very much involved in public financing and political campaigns.
Center for Governmental Studies.
Yes, but the point I'm making is all you're doing is making the taxpayers pay for something that is not in any way going to come up with any meaningful reform, and just look at the presidential campaigns as an example.
Okay. Do you know anything about the positions of the two major parties on this bill?
I don't know what the Democratic Party, I can assure you the Republican Party of California would not support public financing a campaign.
I don't know
where the Democrats are coming from.
It got out of the Elections Committee. It's in the Appropriations Committee. Do you think it will pass there?
I really don't know. I haven't been following the bill, and so I really
okay.
don't know the
if,
answer to
that. As I understand it, it creates a referendum. If it passes the Assembly and passes the Senate, it'll go to the voters in 2008. What do you think the dynamic of that kind of election would be, and do you think that it would, if it gets through the legislature and goes onto the ballot in 2008, do you think it would pass?
I really don't know the answer to that question. I think the voters would be suspicious. First of all, if you do a survey of voters, they don't think money should be given at all to candidates. Most voters, if you really ask them a series of questions, don't like political campaigns, don't like negative TV commercials, don't like to get mail in their mailboxes, don't like listening to candidates, don't want to go to debates. And if you really gave them the option, they would shut down the entire democratic process. But the point is not what you could demagogue or persuade or try to get the voters to do. The question is, you do need political campaigns. You got to remember what the whole purpose. Why is there money in political campaigns? Because the money is the power to communicate. Without it, you're mute. So if you're an incumbent, campaign reform means that you can raise a sizable group of dollars, but your opponents are restricted to 50 cents of, campaign contribution. So your opponent wouldn't be able to have the ability, to run a competitive race against you. That's what creates why money is so important. And that's why, by the way, it falls within free speech rights. When you're talking about the ability to communicate, money is the power to communicate, and money falls under the First Amendment protection rights.
Do you think if the local media were to cover campaigns in greater depth or greater breadth, that would mitigate some of those communication problems?
If you're running for Congress or the state legislature in the Fresno area or the Bakersfield area or the Santa Barbara area in California, where they have local newspapers, local TV stations, and local media to cover local elections, they do have a significant impact on outcomes of elections. I've done campaigns there. If you're running for in the North County of San Diego, they have very active newspapers there in North County, that cover the local election. But if you're running for, Congress in Los Angeles County, and you're one of 33 assembly districts, one of, 14 congressional districts, and one of, 10 state senate districts, and you got a plethora. In Los Angeles County right now, we have 14 open seats in the state legislature, and there's probably a total about 120 candidates running for office. No TV station, and the LA Times and KCAL Channel 9, they can't cover the campaigns of 120 candidates. They can't allow free debates of 120 candidates. It's not possible.
Do you think that the internet could serve some purpose in that area?
Now you're talking something totally different. if there's going to be any significant campaign reform, I think it's going to come across as the Internet.
Well, explain that in more detail.
I'll tell you in more detail. Right now, the difficulty the campaign managers have in a political campaign is that the candidate and his or her campaign has to be the prime motivator of getting the voters' attention. And what I mean by that, voters don't sit around and say, gee, I wonder if we're going to hear from candidate A running for the Assembly or Senate or Congress today, and or they get a piece of mail or hear something. Do they take action necessarily as to what the other candidates are? In other words, I got to force feed the information to them. I got to try to get them into the mailbox or get them.
It's a push situation rather than a pull
situation. But I believe as voters become more and more aware of the Internet, become more and more skilled with the Internet, knowing now, by the way, they don't know how to spell the word. They don't have to go get a dictionary. They don't have the computer all but does it and spells them correctly for them.
Right.
That with web pages and home pages, people are going to know that as Election Day comes around, they can very easily access the web pages of the candidates running for office. And I think you're going to find that for a without having to pay the U.S. government postage fees, without having to pay television stations and radio stations exorbitant, advertising fees, they're going to be able, at a very low cost, be able to continuously get your message across to voters, and voters are going to be very easily be able to access that information.
In fact, I've just been working the last few days setting up some podcasts, which allow people to subscribe to the podcast and automatically download text, audio, and video from the a creator of the podcast, which means that candidates could set up podcasts and have someone follow them around with a video camera and edit it at the end of the day and set up their own television station, in essence, on the Internet for their campaign at a relatively low cost.
Yeah, see, up until now, everybody talks about the money in campaigns and too much money in campaigns, but no one's ever talked about how to reduce the cost of campaigning. For example, candidates now running in the next year's June primary are going to pay exceedingly more for their direct mail because the postage rates just went up.
Right.
I mean, my goodness, when I first started running, doing political campaigns 30 years ago, it cost 2 cents to get the 2 cents in postage to get a piece of mail out. Now it's 17 and a half. I think it's going up to 20 cents.
So do you think all that will essentially force people onto the Internet or encourage them to use the Internet more?
I believe what the Internet is going to do in modern technology is significantly reduce the cost of what it takes to be able to communicate to the electorate. And all of a sudden, you don't need $5 million to get elected to the state senate. You do not need $1 million to get elected to the state assembly or $1 million to get elected to the house. And you could do it for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. That itself will be significant campaign reform. And that is what I think you may very well see in the future.
Okay. Let's wrap up by focusing on AB 583 again. If it were passed, approved by the voters, and implemented, what impacts do you think it would have procedurally and substantively on California politics, if any?
Increase the amount of money the state of California is spending on plans and programs. I don't think it will have any impact at all in lessening the influence of special interest groups. Labor is still going to do everything they can to elect their own candidates. Business are going to do all they can to elect their type of candidates. All it's going to do, in my opinion, is just make more and more of the private money going elsewhere, and the candidates not necessarily having as much control over their campaigns as they would like.
Do you think that 583 will fall of its own weight, or are you and others that you know working actively to defeat it?
No, I'm not doing anything to import or to defeat it. In fact, I haven't even focused on it yet, though I probably should get on the ballot. I will take a position.
Okay.
Again, I just want, as one who's managed campaigns for over 30 years, believe it should be the candidate who is determining the tenure of the campaign. It's the candidate and his or her committee should be paying for it. And the more you restrict the use of dollars to the candidate, the more you drive private money underground, significantly increases the influence of these special interest groups.
Okay. Now, if it fails to be implemented, what trends do you see in the near and midterm future for campaign finance?
I think, by the way, you might even see simultaneous. It's just full disclosure. We have the technology now that if all of a sudden you get $1,000, $2,500, or what have you in a campaign, that it should.
Again, that's the Internet. As the check hits the bank, it can hit the Internet.
Yeah, it could hit the Internet at the same time.
Okay, finally, could you elaborate a little bit more on what you think the impact of, in terms of the possible creation of new parties, the undermining of the existing party structure, and the infusion of new ideas into the political process could be created by what you were talking about with the drastic restructuring of the campaign process through the Internet?
Well, I don't think funding has as much. We are still pretty much a two-party democracy, you know, throughout all of our 50 states. There's some pockets here and there where the Green Party has some political clout, particularly in the San Francisco Bay Area and, you know, and areas north of it. But I've seen time after time, for example, when one of the major parties, either Republican and Democrat, don't qualify or don't field a candidate, and it's a Democrat versus a a Libertarian, or it's a Republican versus a Green, and that third party doesn't get very many votes. I don't think the way we fund campaigns is the reason we don't have a plethora of third-party candidates.
What is the reason?
The reason is that those who tend to be active in third-party tend to be on the fringe of politics.
So you're saying that whatever ideas there are that appeal to enough people to win an election are taken up by one or the other or both of the two major parties.
Now, right now, the hardcore conservatives have pretty much dominated the Republican Party, and the hardcore liberals have pretty much dominated the Democratic Party here in California. If you're going to have a third-party movement, it'll probably come from the center more than it'll come from the left or the right.
Well, that just happened, for example, in Israel, with the creation of a centrist party.
Israel is going to, of course, they have proportional representation.
Right.
So you don't elect a congressman, you elect a political party.
Right.
And the party leaders do make the determination whether or not.
Do you see anything on the horizon that would change that single member constituency system and create more variation in the parties?
Oh, I think there could be some interesting concepts, particularly in some of the smaller states and a lot of the smaller communities, to try to do so. But you're never going to have a situation where it's going to be totally proportional. You're not going to have a situation where a voter does not believe they have a person who represents them rather than a political party.
Okay. Why don't you close by giving us your views on AB 583 and what you think the importance of its consideration or defeat are?
I believe its impact would be no greater than the impact of public finance in the presidential campaign. I do not believe it's going in any way lessen the power. And what you need is more accountability. You need more disclosure. I think it's an exercise that's not going to have any serious implications whatsoever. And the emphasis should be on disclosure, not trying to prevent private funding of campaigns.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to us today. And possibly if it stays alive in the legislature and becomes more of a subject of public discussion, we can get back to you and talk about it some more.
That'll be fine.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye.